welcome to our April 2022 episode of Talon Talks, a podcast and video series brought to you through the cooperation of the Talon City Centre Government, the City Centre New Arrivals Council, and the City of Talon as part of the Talon City Centre for New Arrivals project. I'm Chantelle, and I'll be flying solo today as my co-host Salais is back in Ghana, finally able to spend some time with her family as travel has now reopened. So Salais, I hope you're having a great time. This month, we're going to stay focused on the ongoing war in the Ukraine and how the Talon community is continuing to support refugees coming to Estonia during this extremely difficult period. We'll be speaking to Salomia and Sophia from the Ukrainian community. They've been living in Talon for a few years and are going to talk to us about their work at the Refugee Aid Collecting Center through Estonians for Ukraine. But first up, the local news. Estonia has now welcomed 27,000 Ukrainian war refugees so far, and the number of refugees coming to Estonia has currently stabilized at around 500 people per day. Estonia had a crisis plan for accommodating 10,000 refugees before the war, but now with the state scrambling to find everybody long-term accommodation, Tallink Ferry MS Isabel is being used as a temporary accommodation site, and 7,000 refugees are also being hosted temporarily in hotels and other sites created by local governments. Real estate portals have been launching web pages aimed at refugee accommodation, and the government is rapidly trying to find long-term options within the month to get everybody settled and comfortable. And more than 1,900 students from the Ukraine have been offered places in Tallinn's municipal schools and kindergartens, while the Tallinn Education Department is set to sign a contract with the Tallinn University to use its study building on Raagatanav as a branch of the Lilikola High School to teach children of Ukrainian refugees this year. This new school would cater to around 200 students initially, 60 start on Monday, and they're taught by 10 Ukrainian teachers who have themselves arrived in Estonia as refugees. The school could then expand to admit up to 600 students by September, and for those still in Tallinn in the new year, students will then switch to the national curriculum of Estonia. Ukrainian refugees in Tallinn have already registered 2,180 applicants for a Tallinn school place and 690 for a kindergarten place as of this week. Switching gears to transportation, so the Tallinn City Youth Council submitted a proposal on Tuesday to Deputy Mayor Andrei Novikov to launch a weekend night service on Tallinn's public transport, aiming to significantly increase the safety of both late night and early morning commuters, as well as those out partying into the night. The deputy mayor said that a pilot project may be launched sometime as early as this year, stating that it's positive that young Talloners are actively thinking about how to make the urban transportation system more efficient. The council identified Lestame, Haberste, Pohjatallinn, and Pirita as possible areas to be served by the night service, and recommended that the night service routes remain the same based on existing bus routes, but that the buses run at least once an hour. And as we discussed in previous episodes, a call for ideas was carried out among Tallinn residents to create a 9-kilometer-long park on a limestone cliff bordering Lesname, Keskelin, and Pirita, a key part of the green mobility network included in the Tallinn 2035 development strategy. Nearly 400 proposals were received, with nearly 70% of the ideas raised by residents in the 25 to 45-year age range. Results were presented at the end of March, with a clear focus on preserving the natural environment, while also including things like viewing platforms, hiking trails, cafes, picnic and barbecue areas, and other recreational facilities. But the public also raised concerns about the dangerous cliff slope, the inconvenient connections between the different parts of the area, the lack of walkable roads, the car-centric urban spaces, and unsafe crossings, which will all need to be addressed as part of the project. Tallinn Mayor Mihail Kolvart was in Helsinki this week to meet his Finnish counterpart on the subject of our Twin City cooperation. The two mayors signed a new Tallinn-Helsinki Memorandum of Understanding, which previously expired at the end of 2021, and puts in place the cooperation framework to initiate joint projects and activities, including how cooperation can be strengthened between the cities to mitigate the crisis in the Ukraine. The Memorandum of Understanding highlights cooperation in the fields of climate and sustainable development, creative industries, as well as the continued cooperation on innovation and enhancing the competitiveness of the Twin Cities from both a financial, material, and human resources perspective, aiming to multiply the attractiveness of the region and become one of the leading economic centers in the Baltic Sea region. And in news that feels very Estonian, in order to ensure a safe migration route for amphibians migrating from their wintering grounds to breeding ponds, Tallinn City has applied a temporary ban on motor vehicle traffic on Astangu Street, which is one of the largest amphibian migration corridors in Estonia, from the 31st of March to the 14th of April, 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. All amphibians are under protection in Estonia, and the Red Data Book classifies them as one of the most endangered animal groups. In the absence of a traffic restriction, a large number of the migrating toads could perish without the volunteers on site to help the amphibians. Deputy Mayor Vladimir Svet stresses that being a green capital is not just about being a city with plenty of parks and green areas. It's also a city where we can all do our part to preserve biodiversity by being mindful of all living things. Tallinn's developed a diverse urban habitat, but sometimes it needs a little human hand. Volunteers can join the Astangu Toad Rescuers group on Facebook, where they can find out exactly when a helping hand is needed. Each new volunteer could also go through a training session to learn where the breeding pond is, how to pick up a toad, and where amphibians can be put together in a bucket. Tallinn City and Vimsi Parish, together with the Stockholm Environment Institute, are participating in a project involving partners from 12 countries to make school meals healthier and more environmentally friendly for children in Europe. The School Food for Change project involves 3,000 schools and more than 600,000 school children across Europe, and will focus on the food system as a whole, including the creation of sustainable criteria for catering, procurement, the promotion of healthy, environmentally sustainable food consumption and preparation, as well as development of an entire school food culture framework. This will bring together all of the actors involved in school meals, the pupils, the parents, the teachers, farmers, caterers, chefs, nutritionalists, and local businesses. The initiative was presented to all the schools in Tallinn on Thursday last week, after which every school in the city will have the opportunity to apply as part of the project. And last Sunday, more than 6,370 people visited the museums that have joined the Tallinn Museum Sunday program. That's a new record. Launched in March this year, the program enables free visits to the city's own museums on the first Sunday of every month. And as the first Sunday in May falls on a public holiday, the next Tallinn Museum Day will take place on the 15th of May, which incidentally is also Tallinn Day. On this occasion, the museums will also have a number of special programs in place. The City of Tallinn is awarding a total of €110,000 to 19 organizations in this quarter's cultural nonprofit funding round. In addition, nearly €70,000 in operating grants will also be awarded to 60 song and dance festival groups. The projects being supported both highlight traditional cultural events as well as exciting new initiatives. For example, supporting the Headweed Literary Festival, the summer cultural events of the Estonian Museum of Contemporary Art, the second edition of the International Animation Festival, Animist Tallinn, and the fourth charity dance marathon by the Soltumatu Tantsulava. And compared to last year, there have been a significant increase in both the number of applications and the amount of funding requested. So in 2021, there were 105 applications in the first two rounds, requesting around €650,000. Whereas now in 2022, the same period has seen over 120 applications, requesting over €1 million. The number of operating grants awarded to semi-professional choirs and music collectives participating in the Estonian Song and Dance Festival has also increased, so from 33 groups last year to 60 this year. All supported cultural projects are listed in the Tallinn Project and Operating Grants Information System, and non-profit activity grants can be applied for four times a year. So the next application rounds will take place in mid-May for activities starting in July and mid-August for activities starting in October. All of the procedures and additional conditions are available on the Tallinn website. Hi, with us today we have Solomia and Sophia, who are members of the Ukrainian community in Tallinn, who are going to talk to us a little bit about the experiences of Ukrainians still in the Ukraine, the work that they're doing with the Tallinn community to support those Ukrainians, and how we can all help support in this incredibly difficult and chaotic time. So thank you so much, guys, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Maybe let's start with a bit about you two. So how long have you been in Tallinn? What brought you here? Where are you originally from in the Ukraine?
So I'm originally from Lviv. Okay. It's the west part of Ukraine. I moved to Estonia in 2016, and I met Salomea here because we came to study, to do our master's degree, and we met here.
Cool. And Lviv is definitely a place that has been obviously in the news significantly.
Yeah, it's currently the safest place probably in Ukraine, but yeah, still under the threat. So.
Yeah, okay. And Salomea?
Yeah, so me and Sofia came to study in Tartu. Mm-hmm. This is where we met. We lived together in the same block.
Nice.
It was already almost 6 years ago.
Wow. Cool. Amazing. And obviously, I mean, I can't imagine what it's been like for you guys to be here and having to watch this on the news and then hear through, obviously, family and friends back home. But tell us a little bit about the work that you guys have been doing and that actually you created for supporting the Ukrainians who are still back home.
So basically, the war started on the 24th. We woke up to the terrible news. For me, it took probably like 2 days to live through that. I've been crying so much, and then very much stress. But then I realized that we need to help. We need to do something because it was getting too much. So I started searching on the internet what is possible to do, where the help is needed. Mm-hmm. And we realized there is no single place, or like the information is very distributed. It's all over the place. It's in Facebook, on some websites, mm-hmm. and so on. So we got this idea to gather all the information together and to make a website where people like us can basically go and see all the options for help, where the help needed.
Okay.
So basically we did it. As well as we started, we realized that there is also a lot of information for the refugees. The buses started getting organized to come to the border, pick up the refugees. So there was also a lot of information for the refugees, but as well as on different pages, different websites. So we decided to collect all the information and basically post it on one information page altogether. This is the work that was done on the weekend, basically. Yeah. At the same time, we started getting the messages. Sophia's sister texted her with the things that we started getting the messages that there are things that needed in Ukraine, needed to help, like the protective gear, for example, for the territorial defense. In Ukraine, we started the territorial defense, which is some kind of similar to what you have in Estonian defense league. When people who are not officially in the army, they are organizing, they have training, and then they start protecting their own homes, their own towns and villages. So we realized that there is a lot of help needed, and we thought, okay, and we've got the list of things to buy. We thought, okay, we can buy it ourselves, we have some money, we can also ask our friends to buy them as well and bring it, but where do we bring it? This is how I started looking for the place for the aid to bring. Ask some friends, post it on Facebook. Someone suggested talking to the priest in the Ukrainian church in the city center. So I called the priest and he said, sure, take our basement. And this is how on Monday we already opened the collection point. So it's been like 4 days since the beginning of the war until the collection point is
open.
We posted it on the media, we posted it on Facebook, we added it to the website that we created like 1 day earlier.
Wow.
And this is how it all started. People started bringing help. We started thinking, okay, within a day, we've got enough for the van. So we started thinking, how do we transport it to Ukraine? This is where other people also came and said, we are the drivers, we have the vans, we can bring it to Ukraine. As well as on social media, again, we saw that the people, that the friends of Sofia, they are looking for the diaspora to help from the outside. So we connected with them, and this is how it all started. We started sending the vans to the border. They were coming to the border, picking up things, and then everyone was going back. And for the first week, we were sending the car every day, one van every day, pretty much.
Wow.
Then it's like once to 3 days, once per 4 days, maybe now once per week or so.
Okay.
But basically, yeah. Another person, Estonian, started coming and giving some cash as well as giving other help that we needed. For example, one Estonian man gave us his van to use indefinitely, as much as we need to pick it, to take it back later. So that van went to the Ukrainian border probably like, I don't know, 6-7 times already, maybe up to 10 times. That's been a huge, huge help, as well as another Estonian delivery companies were offering help and saying, whenever you need to bring something, just call us. They didn't take any money, just brought. So this
is
how the system got organized by itself, purely on the help of volunteers and just usual people from around us.
That's amazing. So, okay, so we've got the website, which is, it's Estonians for Ukraine, correct? And there's kind of...
Estonia for Ukraine.
Estonia for Ukraine.
Yes.
Okay. And that's where there's both information for people that want to help and support you guys in getting goods and making donations and things like that.
And that's where the list with all the needed things is, and okay. where we're updating it all the time.
Okay. And that list, it's coming from, you know, people, the needs that you're hearing on the ground from friends and family and things like that?
Pretty much. And also from different organizations that usually publish those lists. So we combine it all together.
Got it.
And update it on our website. Okay.
And what are the things that are most needed right now?
It's usually medicines, food, some protection gear, and many other things, like some devices, some old laptops, phones, and stuff like that.
And is that because of the connectivity problems in Ukraine?
It's hard to say.
Okay.
I would say it's, for example, power banks. They are needed because the guys on the in the field, they need a power bank to charge the phone or to fly the drone, let's say.
Got it.
Then as well as just not the smartphone, just normal phones with the buttons because their battery lasts for a very long time.
That old like Nokia bricky used to work for ages.
So many places have problems with electricity.
Okay.
So for electric generators, for example, are needed to the bomb shelters and to the refugees for the places where there's no electricity.
Yeah.
These kind of things.
And also many people had to leave their cities in central Ukraine and other cities. So they moved to West Ukraine and they left many things behind.
Okay.
So those things are also needed.
Gotcha. And to support you guys in getting these things and, you know, getting them to the border, what is the best way that you need people to support? Is it the actual kind of purchase and donating the goods themselves? Is it donations of money so that you can buy things in bulk and do it the most efficiently? What's the best way if people do want to support and help?
Both. First, maybe to check the list of things.
Okay.
And if you can find it or donate your things, definitely bring it. And if you can help us financially, then send us some money.
Okay.
Because we already have many contacts of different companies or organizations where we can buy it with discount. We just need money for that.
Okay.
One more way would be perhaps if you have a prescription for some kind of medicine, like which is usually for hormones or insulin.
Okay.
And if you have maybe a little bit too much, if you have enough of you and you can share a little bit of your insulin with us, we can bring it to the places where it's so much needed.
Okay, interesting. Okay, fine. And in terms of personal time, I mean, you mentioned, for example, people donating vans and drivers. I think particularly even from a personal perspective, I've wanted to go in and help personally and say, how can I give my time? But I know that I don't speak Estonian, Russian or Ukrainian. So I'm always thinking, I wonder if I can be of help as well. Is there a use for people to donate their time to help you either sort or pack or whatever things as well? And can the expat community be helpful in that? Or are we've got people, we've got the right people on the ground. We just need, the things in the cache to make sure it all happens.
I think you do can. Maybe not restarting that much because right now it's been more than 40 days since the war started.
Yes.
And unfortunately, people get used to the bad times and to the war.
Yeah.
So the stuff that we get is less and less. Basically, when we started with around 10 people at place sorting and working very efficiently and hard. At this point, it's one, two persons is enough. So we are thinking if you don't get more, we are thinking about even shrinking even that and be open like maybe 2 hours per day or something because it's getting less and less and harder to get aid and to get money. But how can you help? When we load the van, we usually need some kind of help. We also need an English translation someone sometimes, but that should be the person who knows both then Ukrainian and English. of course the money. And if you're a driver and you have the van and if you're ready to go to spend like 2 or 3 days of your life to go and help, then our friends, our Ukrainian friends speak English as well. So that is also very much needed.
Okay. Drivers, amazing. How long does it take to drive to the Ukraine?
At least 16 hours, but usually takes more time.
Okay.
So yeah, we usually book a hotel for our drivers to stay overnight. Then they're coming back. It usually takes to get back, maybe 22 hours.
Okay. Yeah. And what is that process like of transitioning the goods at the border? Is it relatively kind of, I presume probably the border with Ukraine is an absolute chaos.
So
right
we are
now.
Delivering our cars to Shageni-Medyka border control. You can basically come to from a Polish side to the neutral zone. It's a green zone where you can unload all the things. And people from Lviv, those people that pick up those things, they come also to the same zone and they pick it up, they repack it to a different car and they bring it back to to Lviv.
Okay, so it's you literally transfer the goods over in the green zone. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And are you guys working with, I mean, you mentioned this all kind of stemmed from your friends and family back in Lviv. Are they simultaneously kind of creating this almost structure and working with different local people as well to bring this all together on that side as well?
Yes. They cooperate with different organizations. One of them is Lviv Plast. There is also this Comeback Alive Fund and other small organization, or they're donating it directly to people who need this help because they know and they receive many requests, of course. So it's sometimes even better to give it personally to someone because in a big organization it takes some time to distribute it and to deliver it to some places. So if they have a chance, they give it to themselves by delivering. Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing how these kind of grassroots things come together in times of need. You know, there's obviously the big organizations like the Red Cross and UNHCR and things like that, but it's these kind of like personalized things and the amazing things that you guys have done that really kind of make that personal kind of difference to people on the ground, I'm sure.
Yeah, we actually didn't realize there are so many Ukrainians here in Estonia.
Yeah,
we met new friends here.
Amazing.
And so now we have friends in Ukraine, also people that I was just following on Instagram, but they became our best friends because they help us with this thing that we deliver.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And I mean, I think if I remember statistics that I read, previously there were around 30,000 Ukrainians in Estonia, but now there's been 27,000 more arrive, in the past month. So mm-hmm. the population is getting significantly larger. Have you guys, is that population of Ukrainians that are coming to Tallinn and fleeing to Tallinn, are they also getting involved with your project and wanting to still remain?
Yes, definitely. They do. They say that we arrived a couple of days ago. We need some time to sort our documents, but they come and help us and offer their help and sort and load and so on. So there's been a lot of help both from Estonians, Ukrainians who live there for a while and Ukrainians who recently came. We already have good friends.
I can imagine. I can't imagine what it feels like to make that decision to leave, but then to know what you've left behind and you know, wanting to find a way to help as well.
It is very hard. Yeah, and we can see that in their eyes.
Yeah.
And when they come and they tell our stories, sometimes it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I know we can just cry all together over there and then like, okay, we're done. Let's get back to work.
Yeah. Okay. And how have you mentioned, the Ukrainian, the Estonian community in Tallinn has been supportive. Are you also seeing support from, I know some of my colleagues, for example, I had a couple of colleagues who are Russian and just felt they needed to do something and they actually went to the Ukrainian border with Poland and tried to work out how they could donate their time.
Do we have the same colleagues?
Yeah.
Mine did exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a different place. Yes. Russian, some, I cannot say there is many people that we know, but my personal Russian friends, they are very helpful. They help with money and they help with their time. They also came to the border, also brought some people here.
Okay.
Another colleague of mine took my hand and said, I'm so sorry for the war.
Yeah.
So that is the support that we definitely need.
Okay, that's amazing. And in terms of, and I know you guys don't support directly the Ukrainians that have come to Estonia, but in terms of, you know, working with them, knowing them, getting to know them, how have you received any kind of feedback or even kind of anecdotes about how they are finding settling into, I know it's a horrible situation and it's not, you know, by their choice at all, but how they have found the support that they've received in Estonia, is it kind of working? Are they finding what they need here in this time?
There is a refugee center in Estonia that helps a lot. They provide accommodation and food and other like consultations regarding the job. And from my experience, those Ukrainians who came here, they said that they're really grateful to Estonians and the Estonian government, how good it was organized.
Okay, good. That's at least a bit of a relief. Okay, so you mentioned that the donations are drying up, and obviously, yeah, it's horrible that you know, we do get, there is an initial shock factor, and then people do get used to the bad news and almost need a, you know, it's not that you need a break from it, but it's like, you know, a month of this horrific news, people kind of tend to escape a little bit and stop thinking about it. But we need to ramp up. Again, this war obviously isn't over. It's getting worse. We need to get that kind of support and the momentum back. How can people support that? Even obviously donating themselves and talking to friends. Are there posts and things that can be shared? Is there social media that we can, you know, or a Facebook group or anything like that that can be shared online to kind of drum up some of the support? Video content or anything you guys are creating that can be shared?
So one thing I wanted to say is that like I know that many people want to help and many people are donating to those big organizations mm-hmm. now, like Comeback Alive or Red Cross or others. Mm-hmm. But it would be much more useful if they donated to some local organizations because we have the opportunity to buy it and send it right away and it will be quickly and efficient because bigger organizations don't have that much time and it's like... a bit difficult logistically to organize many things, so things okay. are like not yet delivered, or like there are a lot of money, but they cannot even spend them. So, but we have a different problem. We can spend them, but we don't have money. Yes.
That's actually a really great point. I was looking myself as to where I should donate. I donate monthly to the UNHCR in any case. But I was thinking, where can I donate to? Is it, you know, you Google and it's like the Red Cross or Médecins Sans Frontières or these big organizations. But then when you try and look actually for local organizations, there's obviously a huge amount, right? Like, you know, people supporting doctors in Ukraine or people supporting housing or people support, like there's a lot of little places and it can actually be very overwhelming as to know where best to put your money. But you're almost like a central part of that, right? And you're kind of the central funnel of then... covering off various different avenues.
I think you could just choose what is the closest to your heart and donate to that organization. I think that's going to have the most impact. I can just say that that these little initiatives for volunteers, they basically, their role is to fill in the gaps while huge corporate, I don't know, bureaucratic machine starts working and starts delivering goods. So hopefully in a month or so, Ukraine is going to be filled with stuff that it's need, but it takes time with the big organizations. Right. But what we do, if we do it right now and for today, if we send the car tomorrow morning, let's say if we send the car today's morning, this morning, tomorrow in the afternoon, it's already going to be distributed in Ukraine.
Right.
This is the efficiency and this is the speed.
Great point. I mean, and hopefully in a month, we can hope that the things are in a better situation. But yeah, we need to provide for the fact that, or prepare for the fact that this is going to be an ongoing aid support requirement for a while.
Even if, and hopefully so much the war is over, Ukraine is destroyed basically, especially the eastern and central part. We will need aid and money and help to help rebuild it. And this is the long run. And another problem is the burning out. First thing is getting used to the war. And the second thing is the burning out of the volunteers. It's if you have a job and if you do it on your free time, it's hard. During the first week, like everyone was on adrenaline. So it was like the crazy amount of energy, but it's getting less because we were getting used to it. Right now, maybe it's been the second wave after the horrible pictures from Bucha and from another little villages around Kyiv. We see the need, the people are gathering again, the people say, I cannot look at this, it's so horrible that I need to do something, please let me help, give me your account, I'm gonna send you the money. So yes, please do that.
Okay, so to kind of summarize everything, Estonia for Ukraine is a website.
Yeah.
That has both the donation details and the information on actually donating goods at the basement of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church.
It has a section called I Want to Help.
I Want to Help.
In this section, there is, I think, 7 or 8 options. You can find everything. The option one is us, of course, because we made the website and we are collecting it. But there are other options when you can choose what you want to do. There are options to help Ukrainians, to help refugees, for example, to assimilate. And there are options to help them with the language. learning Estonian learning, let's say, there is an option to host someone, option to provide some other services. There is many different things how you can help. You can help if you, you can for yourself. If you're looking for how to help, you basically you should choose something that's closest to your heart. If you want to help the refugees or the internal refugees in Ukraine, the one the people that moved, or for example, you helped us help the army or help the territorial offense to kick them out of our country. And when you chose the way that you like the most, you can find the place to donate money, to bring help, or to spend your time, for example, to be a volunteer on the hotline, to pick up the phone and to give the information to Ukrainians that come, example, here.
Amazing. Okay, I'll leave it there and stop peppering you with questions. But guys, what you're doing is amazing. Thank you so much for bringing this together. I think I'm definitely going to make sure that everyone I know has this website, because I think a lot of people obviously want to help and a lot of people are a little lost or even a little overwhelmed with how best to help. But I think this makes it, you guys have made it so easy. So
we do our best to maintain the website, but of course we cannot look at the internet all 24/7.
Sure.
So if you know any other initiative that helps Ukraine in any way, please, there is email, please write us and we will add it to the website as well.
Great.
We want to keep it like as the one place to go and find everything regarding the war, Ukraine and the war with Russia.
Thank you so much, guys. And good luck, please. Like, what you're doing is amazing. Keep going, hang in there. And yeah, we'll support however we can.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Of course. And that's a wrap on episode 10 of Talon Talks. If you want more local news content, subscribe to the Talon in Brief English newsletter today. The newsletter, which comes out once a month, provides a great overview of what is happening in the capital. And you can find the subscription link in the podcast description below. Also, if you live in the city center or you are just interested in everyday updates from Keskelin, or maybe you have some questions or thoughts for the local authorities, join the Tallinn City Center for Expats official community administered by the Tallinn City Center government. And don't forget to subscribe to the Tallinn Talks YouTube channel as well while you're at it. I'm Chantelle. Thanks for joining us. Get out there and enjoy hopefully some upcoming spring weather, and we'll see you next month.